Casting presents The Phantom of the Opera, a Hammer film production, starring Herbert Lom as the Phantom, Heather Sears as Christine Charles, and Edward D'Souza as Harry Hunter. Directed by Terence Fisher, featuring music from the opera Joan of Arc, composed and conducted by Edwin Astley. Based on the novel by Gaston Leroux, voiced by Tim Bruce on behalf of MCS Agency. The mournful tones of an organ ring out through a deserted auditorium gilded in gold. The sound beckons into an underground sewer, softly running with water, as up on a ledge in a high-vaulted cavern, a white-haired man sits at a church organ, engrossed in his music. A stony bridge leads down to a waterside platform, bedecked in the accoutrements of a makeshift home, where a feral little man with a wild look in his eye listens, cross-legged on a table. The player's hands are singed and black, and through a crude plaster mask stares a haunted eye. Above ground in late Victorian London, excited society people gather outside a busy opera house. A poster reads, "The first performance of a new opera, St. Joan, The Tragedy of Joan of Arc, by Lord Ambrose Darcy." Inside, a smug-looking man with an arrogant aristocratic air nods to arrivals as they cross a sumptuous foyer decorated with marble and gold, flowers and paintings. The man, in his finest evening dress, snootily observes the audience in their top hats and silken dresses. The theatre manager approaches him, similarly dressed.
The house is sold out, my lord.
No further incidents, I trust?
No, nothing. Everything seems quite normal.
A diva uses a spray to warm up her voice.
From his lordship, madam.
Flowers.
Is this all? Yes, madam.
Hmm?
Last time there were diamonds. Put them with the others, Teresa.
Meanwhile, on stage, a heavy wooden medieval chandelier is hoisted up into the fly tower. As it rises upward, a scaly, singed hand fingers the ropes. Down in the orchestra pit, a percussionist is startled to find one of his timpani slashed. Back in the diva's dressing room, the Maria Callas look-alike soprano turns her back to the door and slips into her costume dress.
Teresa, is that you? Teresa, come and help me button my dress.
A scaly hand turns off the gaslight. Outside the theatre, a suave-looking young gentleman approaches the stage door along a darkened brick alleyway. He notices that someone has slashed the poster and raises his eyebrows. He enters through the stage door and scuttles past costumed performers who chatter backstage. He hurries up the stairs towards a door with a star on it. Outside, a man stands in attendance.
What is it now?
Maria. She said she's seen something.
Leave me alone. Go away.
Maria?
She quickly lets him in and locks the door.
He was here, in the room. It was terrible.
Now, Marie.
Now, Maria, nothing. I saw him, I tell you. Standing just over here. Just here. Black. All over black. And his eye staring at me.
His eye?
Eye. One eye in the middle of his forehead. And his face, Harry. It was horrible.
Maria, I'm sure you saw something. Exactly what it was.
It was him.
After the show, we'll try and find out.
Harry, I can't go on tonight.
Of course you can. You're an artist. You're not going to let a little thing like a ghost upset you.
So you do believe me?
Of course I believe you. After the show, I promise we'll find out all about it. Now, you lie down and have a little rest.
Harry, you're so good for me.
5 minutes, please.
Put your feet up for a minute or two, and I'll come and see you before you go on.
Oh, Harry.
I'll send Teresa. Now, shut your eyes and rest. Teresa. Stay with her, won't you?
Harry to the man outside the door.
Is she all right?
Yes. She saw something, Bill.
The conductor.
My music, Mr. Hunter, some of my music is missing.
You don't need it. Rossi, you know it backwards.
I know, but who could have done such a
thing? Someone's playing a joke.
We had too many jokes.
He's right.
Come on now. First night on a funeral.
Thank you, Bill.
Rossi enters the band room and checks some loose music manuscript on a stand before heading up some steps, through a curtain, and up into the orchestra pit. He smooths back his balding white hair as a light catches him in its bright beam, and he makes his way with dignity to the conductor's podium. He graciously receives the audience's enthusiastic applause and shakes hands with the lead violinist before raising his baton and signaling to the orchestra to begin. Harry joins the theatre manager in one of the boxes.
All right, Latimer, it's only me.
Thought it was Lord Darcy.
He'd come in late, you know that.
Well, on the first night of his own opera.
All the more reason for making a good entrance.
I don't understand it. I really don't understand it.
Don't you? I understand it all right. What I don't understand is how Ambrose Darcy can write so much excellent music in the last few years when he has so little musical taste.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Oh.
You're welcome.
A full house, my lord.
So you keep telling me. They seem to sense good music, don't they?
Yes. They like a good tune.
If he wasn't the best producer in London...
I'm quite sure he meant no disrespect, my lord.
The audience applauds Darcy, who signals his imperious approval to Rossi far below in the pit. As Darcy settles into his seat, the overture comes to a close, and the curtain rises on some medieval English soldiers occupying a French village.
Name of the Earl of Warwick.
Who speaks in the name of the Earl?
Lousy Frenchy, you think this is a joke? I'll tell you something now to take your smile away. From this day forward, there is to be an increase in the taxes.
I thought you said the house was sold out.
So it is, my lord.
Then why is that box empty over there?
There have been complaints, my lord.
Complaints? Complaints of what?
Of noises, my lord.
What?
Voices. People do not like to sit there, my lord.
Are you trying to tell me it's haunting?
That's what they say, my lord.
This is too much. I shall speak to your directors in the morning. Perfectly good box going to waste.
As the curtain comes down on the first act, scene shifters make ready the next scene, and as the feral little man watches from the fly tower, Harry escorts Maria into the wings. As the music resumes, a torn page is revealed in the conductor's music score. Feral man watches from above as Maria commands the stage. Everything stops as a canvas flat angles forward and is ripped open by a descending hand. The Phantom observes from a peephole in the haunted box as a lifeless body swings towards Maria in a hangman's noose. The next day, a sign is pasted over the poster reading, "Postponed indefinitely." Darcy to Latimer in his office.
Of course, I appreciate that the police had to be called in. After all, the criminal must be apprehended and punished.
Of course, my lord.
At the same time, Latimer, I rely on you to see that not one breath of scandal attaches itself, either to my name or to the name of my opera.
I have already given instructions to the police to that effect, my lord.
The whole affair has been acutely embarrassing for me. It's been quite terrible, you understand. I doubt if the damage to my work can ever really be repaired. Maria has refused ever to sing in this country again. Heaven knows where we'll ever find anyone to take her place.
Mr. Hunt is already investigating that possibility, Malone.
In what way is he investigating that possibility?
He was holding auditions this morning, Malone.
Without consulting me?
He said he thought it would be the best thing.
I shall decide what is best and what is not best for my opera. How dare he!
The Phantom observes Harry's auditions.
Hunter, shh. Listen to me, Hunter.
You listen to her.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Christine Charles.
Sang that beautifully, Miss Charles. I don't think we need to look any further, do you?
She's a very lovely girl.
You've got a very lovely voice, too. Go and wait in your dressing room, Miss Charles.
To Latimer.
I'll leave you to fix the contract, shall I? She'll need a bit of coaching, of course. We should be able to open in a week or two with a bit of luck. Bill, act one, scene one, start rehearsing in 15 minutes.
Right. Come along, girls. Come along, girls.
I give that to Miss Charles.
Latimer rolls his eyes as Darcy hands him his card and Harry looks on with resigned disgust. Meanwhile, in the dressing room, the other chorus girls congratulate Christine as they change for rehearsal.
I wish I could sing like that.
So do I.
Oh, surely yes, the door. Yes?
Latimer at the door.
Lord Ambrose Darcy.
Thank you.
What is it?
Have you got a car?
Yes,
come to dine with him tonight.
Oh, champagne.
Marvelous.
But I've got nothing to wear.
You can borrow my blue.
Well, I'll loan you my green.
But you're about my size.
Wardrobe will lend you something.
Oh, yes.
No, this is an occasion. You must have something new.
But I can't possibly afford anything.
Well, how much can you afford?
A few shillings, that's all I have.
Well, I can let you have five.
Oh, no. Oh.
I can spare half a car.
Oh, you must now, you stay here and get ready, and as soon as we've got a moment, we will come and help you choose it.
Oh, really? Yes.
Come on, girl.
Come on.
Go down to
don't worry.
As the others leave, Christine sits down and smooths her hair in the dressing room mirror.
Young woman. Young woman, listen to me.
Who is that? Who are you?
Be quiet and listen. You sang well, but you will sing better. I shall teach you. When you sing, it will be only for me.
Please, who are you?
Only for me. Do you understand?
I understand what you say, but...
You are dining with Ambrose Darcy tonight. Be warned. He is a vile and vicious man.
Who are you? Where are you hiding? Please tell me.
A woman enters.
I forgot this.
Please, tell me who you are.
Later that evening, a maitre d' inspects glasses on a newly set table as guests dine lavishly at an expensive London restaurant. He passes a waiter, expertly spooning a flambé sauce, and approaches the revolving entrance door to receive the elegantly dressed Christine.
Mademoiselle?
I believe Lord Ambrose Darcy is expecting.
Of course.
The maitre d' helps her take off her coat, while Darcy wolfishly knocks back his sherry, and he foppishly shows the tiara Christine to Darcy's table.
How charming you look, my dear.
Shall I serve the champagne, my lord?
Of course.
It's very pretty here, isn't it?
I expect you'll have guessed why I invited you here.
Yes, sir, I think so.
We'll eat a little, drink a little champagne, and then we'll talk about it.
One and a half bottles of champagne later.
I insist.
No, really, thank you.
A brandy.
She shakes her head.
A waiter.
Yes, my lord?
Tell Xavier we don't want to be disturbed.
Yes, my lord.
Christine begins to look concerned.
Now, that little matter we were going to discuss. About your singing in my new opera. You guessed it was that, didn't you?
Yes.
Of course you did. You've got a brain in that pretty little head of yours. A brain and a voice. A good singing voice. Small, mind you, needs training, but it's there. Just wants bringing out training.
I know.
Needs a lot of training.
I realize that, of course.
Of course, I'm a busy man, but I think I might be able to spare you a few minutes now. Just a few, mind you.
Oh, if only you could, I'd be so grateful.
I'd expect you to be grateful. You're a delicious little thing. I'm going to enjoy teaching you. I have an idea. Let's have the first lesson now, right away.
The theater will be closed.
My apartment will.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
I'm an expert teacher.
No, please.
Do you want to sing in my new opera, or don't you?
Oh, you know I do.
Harry arrives.
Good evening, Mr. Hunter.
Evening, Xavier. Not too late, am I?
No.
Harry slips off his coat and follows Xavier into the restaurant with its crystal chandeliers and red golden decor. On the way, he encounters Christine and Darcy.
Good evening, Ambrose.
Good evening, Harry. Miss Charles.
Christine passes by uneasily. As Darcy puts on his cape, she stops and modestly turns back towards Harry.
Mr. Hunter, Lord Ambrose has very kindly offered to coach me in my singing.
Has he?
Tonight.
Tonight?
Yes, and I wondered if you could possibly spare the time. That is, if you'd care to.
But of course. Nothing I like better than watching Ambrose teaching you how to sing. Shall we go?
But Mr. Hunter...
I've changed my mind, Xavier. I'm putting on weight. Ambrose?
It is rather late. They'll fetch you a cab, Miss Charles.
No need. She can come with me.
A sour-looking Darcy hurries out of the restaurant.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure, believe me. Miss Charles?
They walk formally arm in arm to the entrance, where a waiter holds Christine's coat.
You're not really putting on weight, are you?
I don't think so.
Then you must be starving. Please go back. I can easily find my own way home.
Have you eaten?
Why, yes.
But did you actually eat anything?
I was too nervous.
Will you join me for supper, Miss Charles?
Happily, the two walk back into the restaurant.
For two this time, Xavier.
Of course, Mr. Hunter.
Later, in a taxi cab.
Thank you for everything.
He must have been furious.
I suppose tomorrow I should be back singing in the chorus again.
There is a chorus tomorrow. We've had a strange run of bad luck with this opera, Christine, from the moment we started rehearsing. First, it was little irritating things. Music disappearing, costumes torn, scenery damaged. Then things got worse, and finally, last night, a man was killed on the stage.
The police say
it was suicide.
You don't believe that?
I think there's something evil in this theater, Christine. Something or someone trying to stop the opera from ever being performed.
When I was sitting in my dressing room today, I thought I heard a voice speaking to me.
Today? When?
Just after I had the invitation from Lord Ambrose, a voice warned me not to go. He spoke...
He?
Oh, yes, it was a man's voice.
Did you recognize it?
No, I'd never heard it before. He spoke quietly, but very clearly, so that I could hear every word.
But you couldn't see him?
No.
Was it dark?
No.
Well, perhaps he was hiding somewhere in the wardrobe, in the cupboard.
I didn't see him because he wasn't there.
Are you afraid?
Afraid? No.
Would you go back there with me?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Cabby?
Hello!
Take us to the opera house.
What, now?
Now.
Oh, it's closed.
Yes, I know. Quick as you can.
All right. Go on, Joe.
Later, Christine and Harry arrive at the stage door of the theatre. Inside, some cleaning women pick through the rubbish gathered that evening.
Oh, No one ever seems to lose anything worth losing nowadays.
No, like a nice diving tirara, eh?
Hello, what have we here?
You've come to see the show. You're a bit late, dearie.
Ain't he handsome?
Oh, he's lovely. He's got his girlfriend with him.
Looking for a nice dark corner to do a bit of courting, was you?
Good evening. My name is Hunter. I'm the producer of the opera.
Yeah, and I'm the Queen of England. Now be off with you and do your wooing elsewhere.
But I assure you...
Go on. Go on. Get out of here.
You haven't found a small diamond brooch, have you?
Oh. When did you lose it?
Last night.
Last night? Where was you sitting?
Stalls.
Front or back?
Front.
That's me! Oh! Let me give you a hand.
Take your hands away. It's all mine. What's in here?
Do you think it might still be in the theatre?
He's right.
Come on, go. Here, the front door's in here. Get out there now. It's
As the cleaners cackle with excitement and race each other into the auditorium, Christine and Harry head towards the chorus dressing room. Inside, everything is shrouded in gloomy darkness. Ever the gentleman, Harry shows her in by the hand and places his hat and cane on a dressing table and removes his gloves. He reaches into his pocket, strikes a match and lights a gas lamp that hangs on a nearby brick wall. In the gaslight, Harry stands by a costume rail.
Now, can you remember which direction this voice came from?
Well, not exactly.
Well, sit down just as you were sitting when you heard it.
She sits at her place before the mirror.
Now, you were sitting there, and the voice came from...
The voice came from somewhere over there.
As Harry rounds the corner, the light begins to dim.
The gas. Harry.
Don't be afraid.
Mr. Hunter. Mr. Hunter, I do not want you meddling with something that does not concern you. Do you understand?
No, I do not. Who are you?
Get away from here. Get away. You do not know what may happen to you.
I'm not easily frightened.
Then you should be. My threat is not an idle one. There are forces of evil at large in the opera tonight. Leave the girl and go while you may. Do you hear me? Leave the girl here and go.
The cleaners rush out of the theater in a panic.
Harry, look.
A shadow appears on the wall.
It's only the old rat catcher. Don't be alarmed. I won't do you no harm. Think I must have given them cleaners a bit of a turn. They're usually gone by the time I'm around. I'm the rat catcher, you see, sir. Place is alive with them. I searches them out with my lamp. Then I sort of hypnotises them till I'm near enough to pounce. Oh, I'm sorry, lady. I caught a couple of beauties tonight, sir. Fat, like young puppies they are. Here, I'll show you. No, none of that. I'll find them for you in a moment, sir. You'll never believe your eyes.
Oh, please stop him.
Please don't bother on our account.
No? Well, I could let you have them both for tums, sir. They make a lovely pie, you know.
We're vegetarians.
Pity.
Here's something for your trouble, then.
Thanks, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Well, good night to you, then.
The rat catcher wanders off down a corridor and casually enters a backstage room. Unseen, the feral man watches him from some wooden stairs. As the rat catcher blows his nose, the other pulls out a screwdriver, jumps him from behind and stabs him mercilessly through the eye. The feral man, a hunchback, drags his body away as the rats scamper out of the sack in a bid for freedom. Harry spots the rat scuttling towards them across the littered floor and lifts Christine up onto a laundry basket for safety.
Wait here.
While Harry rushes off to investigate, Christine is left stranded as rats nose through the rubbish around her basket. Suddenly, a figure appears at the top of the stairs.
Young woman. Young woman. You must come with me.
Christine pushes her back against the wall and shrinks in breathless terror as the ghoulish figure of the masked phantom, looking like a figure returned from the dead, steps into the light and begins to descend the stairs purposefully towards her. Christine faints with horror. Harry rushes to her aid, and the phantom hurries back up the stairs and into the shadows. Harry helps Christine up and cradles her quivering body in his arms.
It's all right.
Christine buries her head in his shoulder as Harry's eyes follow the stairs upward into the shadows. Later, back at Christine's lodgings.
I did see him, Harry. He was standing there at the top of the stairs.
And he had one eye and a mask?
Yes. All black. And he stood there staring and staring at me. It felt as if he was trying to burn a hole in my brain.
Now, the kettle's on and tea won't be a minute. How are you feeling, my dear?
She needs to sleep.
Quite. A nice cup of tea, then off to bed with you.
You do believe me, Harry?
Yes, I believe you, Christine.
Next day, Darcy and Latimer hold more auditions.
Useless. No good at all.
All right, stop, stop. That's enough. Next, please.
A coquettish young woman flounces to the front of the stage and instantly catches Darcy's eye.
I should like to sing Adele's song in Fledermaus.
Whenever you're ready, my dear.
With a man like you and a girl like me, you really should beware. Looking in your eyes, it is no surprise, I'll tell my heart, take care. And if I should let myself go, we'll sample some pleasures, I know. We'll drink to each other, we'll tell one another of everlasting love, of everlasting love. Such a man as you, with a girl like me, you really should beware. Looking in your eyes, it is no surprise, I'll tell my heart, take care.
Quite excellent. Needs a little work, of course. Tell her to come to my office. Very good, my dear.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. That's all. Thank you very much.
Darcy passes Harry.
What's going on, Ambrose?
I have been endeavouring to find someone with the ability to do justice to the leading role in my opera, Mr. Hunter.
But I thought you'd agree that Miss Charles was to sing it.
You may have thought so. Now, if you'll excuse me.
No.
Have I not made myself sufficiently clear? Miss Charles is not to sing in my opera, not in the leading part, nor in any other. She has received her dismissal this morning.
You small-minded fat...
Be careful, Mr. Hunter.
Just because she refuses to go to your apartment...
Mr. Hunter!
In the middle of the night...
You're dismissed! Do you understand? Now get out of my way.
Bill and Rossi overhear from the stage.
Sorry, Harry. You made me send the note round by hand.
I'll go and see her. Everything else happens, let me know, will you?
Yes.
Later, at Christine's lodgings, Christine reads a note.
Christine?
No, he can't. It's not fair.
Of course it's not.
If he'd stopped me from playing St. Joan, not to let me sing at all, it just isn't fair.
Fairness isn't one of his virtues, Christine.
I forgot to ask. Oh, I'm sorry. It's all right, Mrs. Tucker. I thought you'd like a glass of sherry wine, but perhaps...
Nothing I'd like better, Mrs. Tucker. I'll drink it while Mrs. Charles is getting ready to come and have lunch with me.
Oh, no, Harry, I couldn't.
Of course you could. I insist that you come and celebrate.
Celebrate, Mr. Hunter?
Yes, Mrs. Tucker. Today we both got the sack.
Oh, no, Harry.
Oh, yes, Harry. So we've both got nothing to do and all the time in the world to do it in. And I'll allow you just 10 minutes of it to get ready, not a moment more.
I'll try.
The prim Mrs. Tucker follows Christine out with a look of disapproval etched into her aging face. Harry looks around the room and wanders over to an open piano. Across the cluttered Victorian room with its roaring fireplace, he notices a large music box on a table. He sidles over to it and switches it on with childlike glee. As the music continues to play, he walks over to a Victorian moving picture machine and turns the crank handle at its side. As the tiny grey photographs flicker by, he sees a comical scene through a viewing glass of a woman whose body detaches itself, then returns to its owner. Next, his curiosity takes him to the corner of the room, where he begins to inspect an elaborately decorated changing screen. Towards the bottom, he notices a fragment of orchestral music manuscript pasted on. As he bows down to read it, Mrs. Tuck enters with a tray of drinks and shoots him another disapproving glance.
Oh. I wonder if you could tell me where you got this.
Got it. I made it.
You... Where did you get this music from?
Oh, that's some of the professors. Professor Petrie. He used to teach singing at the academy. When he remembered to go there, that is. He was a little bit, but very nice. He used to play the piano all day long. I have mostly musicians stay with me, you know. He used to play night and day. I just loved listening to him. Then the neighbors started banging on the wall, so I had to put a stop to it.
Do you think it would be possible for me to have a closer look at that music, Mrs. Tucker?
Well...
If it's not too much trouble, that is.
Oh, no. He left a whole pile of it here. He left me enough to paper the house. But I threw some of it out. Here's some, but it's a bit faded now.
Mrs. Tucker hands Harry a pile of music manuscript from a large cupboard. Harry hungrily rifles through until one particular piece catches his eye. As he passes the music box, he turns it off. Settles himself down in front of the piano, places the manuscript on the wooden stand, and begins to play.
Remember that bit.
What became of this professor, Mrs. Tucker?
He was killed. Burned to death in a fire. It was terrible.
A fire?
At printers. He'd gone to see them about printing his music. The whole place caught fire while he was there.
Do you remember the name of this printers, Mrs. Tucker?
Let me see. Oh, yes. It was Piggott's by London Bridge. Ready?
Ah. In 5 minutes exactly. Good girl. Thank you very much, Mrs. Tucker, for all your help.
What about your sherry, Mr.?
Oh, of course.
Harry knocks half of it back and politely leaves the rest.
Goodbye, Mrs. Tucker.
Well. The fire, sir? Ah, that would be a bit before my time. Perhaps you would care to see our Mr. Weaver, sir. He's the master printer. He's been here a very long time.
Yes, I'd like that very much.
I'll see if he's available, sir.
What is this, Harry?
It's a long story. I'll tell you over lunch. Ah, Mr. Weaver,
you were inquiring about the fire, sir. Yes. Well, rather about someone who died.
No one died.
But I understood that someone was burned to death in the fire.
Someone was badly burned, sir, but he didn't die. Not here, anyway.
What happened?
He broke in one night, sir. He must have knocked over a lamp or something and put the whole place ablaze.
He tried to put it out with
what he thought was water, sir. But it was some of this for etching the plates. He threw a whole jar full at the flames. Some of it splashed back in his face.
The elderly printer pours a corrosive fluid onto a wooden worktop.
Nitric acid, sir.
What became of him?
He ran out screaming. No one ever saw any more of him.
And you've no idea who he was?
No, sir.
Nor why he broke in?
He was a burglar. I suppose, sir.
Thank you very much for seeing us, Sergeant. I'm sure you must be very busy.
It's quite all right, sir.
I'm inquiring about a fire.
A fire, sir?
At Pickett's, the printers. Do you remember it?
I remember it well, sir. I was on duty. Saw it all.
There was a man badly burned.
There was indeed, sir. He came running out of that place screaming blue murder. If you'll pardon the expression, miss.
Where did he run to?
Straight up the street and into the river, sir.
The river?
That's right, miss. Straight in he went. About here.
Later, Harry and Christine peer over the river wall at the Thames side.
So that's where he went.
Who, Harry? Who is this mystery man?
I'll tell you over lunch.
Lunch? It's almost three.
Is it? Oh, well, tea then. We'll have tea in the park, then a row on the lake. And dinner at Frascati's. And then perhaps we'll have some supper.
Below them, high water flows into a drainage outlet in the wall. Later that night, Harry and Christine cuddle up close inside a taxicab.
The cab stopped.
Has it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, time to go around the park again.
Oh, Harry, we can't. He's been round four times already.
Well, perhaps he liked it.
Harry alerts the driver by tapping on the roof with his cane.
Cabby, would you mind taking us round the park again?
Well, it should be a pleasant enough evening for myself. I wouldn't mind a bit. I don't suppose I'll like to hear with rumble much either. But my missus has a nervous disposition. She don't like being left on her own at night time. She don't. So, if you wouldn't mind, sir.
I understand perfectly.
What you would, sir.
Looks like I'll have to take you home.
Thank you for a lovely day.
The first of many I wouldn't mind to miss, eh? I think I just could inspect the iron, sir.
As the cabbie closes his peephole in the roof, Harry and Christine draw close to each other and kiss.
All in order, sir, but the honest, sir. Yeah. I'll just climb aboard again, sir.
The aging cabbie mounts the cab and prepares for the off.
Harry, you never did tell me about that mystery man, you know.
That's quite simple. I found out how Ambrose Darcy managed to write such good music. He didn't. Someone else wrote it for him.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I know.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. The real composer's dead. We've enough trouble without making more.
All right, then, Shep.
Very all right, thank you.
Right, we're away, then. Come on, Lightning, soon be home now.
The cabbie cracks his whip, and the horse and carriage disappear into the night. Later that night, a love-struck Christine skips into her room and throws her hat, coat and bag onto a Victorian brass bed, smiling blissfully as she reflects on her amorous evening. She rushes over to a curtain and pulls it open. From behind the open window glowers the feral gaze of the hunchback. As the phantom continues to play, the hunchback drags the unconscious Christine through a secret entrance behind a stove in the basement of the theatre and into the phantom's underground lair. Throws her doll-like body over his shoulder and wades across an underground water channel up to his waist. He places her on a key-like structure on the other side and climbs out to listen to his master playing from high up on a rocky ledge. Through, Christine revives. As if at a concert, the hunchback motions her to remain quiet. A terrified Christine watches from below as the phantom in his sepulchral mask turns to regard her from the high rocky ledge. He gestures to his servant, the hunchback, to leave, and he obediently scuttles away into the background. He beckons to Christine, who fearfully stands up and walks cautiously across a rocky bridge towards him. He offers her his hand, and she pulls with momentary terror as he grasps hold and helps her onto the ledge that houses his music and his organ. He sits her down in a chair and points at her demonstratively.
I'm going to teach you to sing, Christine. I'm going to give you a new voice. A voice so wonderful that theatres all over the world will be filled with your admirers. You will be the greatest star the opera has ever known. Greater than the greatest. And when you sing, Christine, you will be singing only for me.
Next day, the coquettish soprano in rehearsal, watched by Darcy.
Most noble Lord Dauphin, I am sent by God to bring succor to your kingdom.
No, 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 not like that. Now start again.
I am sent by God to bring succor to your kingdom.
If you watch me carefully, my dear, I'll give you your cue.
Just one moment, Mr. Rossi. I am taking this rehearsal. When I require any help from you, I shall ask for it.
Then you had better ask for it now, because you most certainly need it.
What did you say? Stop it! Stop it, I say! You're dismissed.
Rossi puts down his baton.
Good morning, gentlemen.
One by one, each of the members of the orchestra pick up their instruments and leave.
What are they playing at? Stop them! Stop! Stop! Where are you going? Stop, I say! You're dismissed! They're all dismissed.
To Bill.
You too. And you. You come to my office. At once.
Latimer dutifully follows. Later, Harry at the stage door.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Morning, sir.
What's happening, Bill?
We've all been dismissed.
But you two?
Yes, and I can't say I'm sorry.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How could they do this to me? My first opera, and I'm let down on every side. First, I'm haunted by ghosts, and now all this. It really is too much. Well, say something. What am I going to do?
I think you should ask Mr. Hunter to come back.
What? What did you say?
I think you should apologize to Mr. Hunter and ask him to come back.
How dare you?
I dare because as manager of this opera house, I am responsible to my director for its welfare. And if I allow you to carry on in this manner, we shall all be made bankrupt.
I refuse to stay and listen to this treason.
Very well. But if you go, I shall take it upon myself to ask Mr. Hunter to return.
Well done, Latimer.
Darcy storms out past Harry.
Oh, I think I feel quite... Oh,
brandy, where do you keep it?
I don't know how I dared.
I'll never forget the expression on his face.
Harry hands Latimer a full glass of brandy.
Oh, Mr. Hunter, what have I done?
You've just proved that you're a man and not a mouse. You've also persuaded me to come back and help you clear up this mess.
Will you really?
I'll just join you in one of these to celebrate. Then we'll get down to work, shall we? Thank
you, gentlemen. Later, Harry on stage.
Would you two change places? Good. Oh, would you come forward a few paces, please? Thank you. Oh, Bill.
Bill whispers something into Harry's ear.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I shall have to leave for a few minutes. I won't be very long. Carry on, Bill.
Hey.
Harry hands Bill his director's book and hurries off stage.
Go from the opening scene.
Her bed has been slept in, but you must have gone up there because her coat was hanging in the wardrobe and the window was wide open. And I never leave the window wide open because you know why.
She can't have left very early, can she, without your knowing?
Well, I'm up at 5:30 every morning. I don't sleep very well at the best of times. Wind, you know, I'm terribly troubled with the wind.
Just as soon as she does return, perhaps you could ask her to come to the theatre.
I should tell her at once, Mr. Hunter. I just can't think what could have happened to her.
Better again. Better again.
Harry arrives in the basement of the theatre and begins to look around for possible secret passageways. He pulls aside a laundry basket and some music stands but finds nothing. He stares momentarily at the heavy-looking stove and turns his attention instead to an empty-looking cupboard in a far corner of the room. He opens the doors to find nothing. In his frustration, he pulls it away from the walls and beats his hand on the painted wooden panels.
I can't.
Slapping her across the face.
Little fool, you think you can become a great singer without suffering? You think that I have not suffered? Scoundrel.
The phantom relives the past.
But, sir, there is 10 years' work there, 10 years of my life. Surely £50 is... I'm sorry, I accept. Thank you. Thank you.
Seeing Christine's puzzled expression, he is suddenly jolted back into the present and, touching his head in pain, settles back to the organ to play.
Sing! Use that wonderful gift that God has given you!
Harry strides into the chorus dressing room, where they heard the Phantom speak to them some days before. He leans against a chair to consider, then re-examines the gas light on the wall.
Phrasing. You begin very quietly.
Keep the tone spinning. Build your voice until the auditorium is filled with the beautiful sound of it.
Harry to the police sergeant at the riverside.
How can you be sure that he died? That's what I want to know. What makes you so sure?
Current's very fast here, sir. He never stood a chance. That's why we're sure.
Did you drag the river? Well, did you?
I've just said the river runs very fast, sir. What would have been the good? Well, I got work to do, sir, even if you haven't.
All right, Sergeant. Well, thank you anyway.
In the pouring rain, Harry looks despondently over the wall at the river below. He thinks he sees something down by the water's edge. He leaves his cane on the top of the wall and approaches some stone steps that lead down to the water. Holding onto a handrail, he cranes out to see high river water lapping into a barred drainage outlet. Suddenly, he hears something from within. Harry recognizes it instantly. He spots a small rowboat tethered to the support of a riverside boathouse. He runs back to street level and begins to take off his jacket and hat. Meanwhile, Christine faints into her chair from exhaustion. The Phantom tries unsuccessfully to rouse her and gestures to the hunchback.
Water.
The feral little man grabs hold of a ceramic mug and scurries towards the water channel that flows through the middle of their cavern home and takes a scoop. He hurries up the rocky bridge and hands the mug to the Phantom, who tosses the water in Christine's face. As she revives, the Phantom drags her impatiently to her feet.
Now this time sink properly. You understand? Use your voice. You understand? Use your voice. From here.
He clutches his heart and continues to play. Meanwhile, back at the river, Harry uses the old rowboat to make his way along the water's edge, grabbing hold of the wall with his hands to guide him along. He reaches the drainage outlet and tethers the boat to the quayside by looping a rope over a small bollard. He places his watch and chain into his jacket pocket, removes it, and leaves it behind in the boat. Then Harry grabs hold of the quayside and lowers himself into the water. He dives down under the bars and re-emerges within the outlet. Ahead of him stretches a network of tunnels that form the city's underground sewage system. Back in the cabin, the Phantom strokes the face of the sleeping Christine with his singed black hand.
Let her sleep.
The Phantom thinks he hears something and returns to his manuscript.
Huh? What was that? Scoundrel. Scoundrel, it's my music. It's my music. It's my...
He tears it up and clutches his head in pain before settling down to play more soothing music. The hunchback places Christine on a large bed and listens, spellbound by the Phantom's music. Meanwhile, Harry loses his footing as he progresses along a water-filled tunnel. In the quiet of the cavern, the hunchback hears him coming and peers into the tunnel's mouth. He grabs hold of a makeshift snorkel with a wooden float on one end and slips into the water. He looks behind him to check on his master, then makes his way into the tunnel. A little way in, he places the snorkel in his mouth, ducks down and lies in wait beneath the water. Harry continues to struggle up to his chest through frothing water, following the eerie sound of the music. Unawares, he approaches the snorkel, its wooden float bobbing on the surface of the water. Harry blinks his eyes with dread as he sees the cavern at the end of the tunnel and forces himself to proceed. Suddenly, the hunchback lunges out of the water with a knife and tries to stab him. Harry reacts immediately and struggles against the determined strength of the hunchback. Harry manages to turn his attacker onto his back and force the knife out of his hand. The hunchback retaliates by jumping out of the water, kicking him in the face, and leaping onto him. Back in the cavern, the intensifying music awakens Christine from sleep. She rubs her weary eyes, and her breath tightens as she remembers with subdued horror exactly where she is. To Christine's surprise, Harry emerges from the tunnel, dragging the hunchback through the water by the scruff of his neck.
Here, Professor Petrie, you better take him!
He lifts the hunchback onto the waterside, and as Petrie backs away in fear, Harry approaches Christine on the bed.
Did he harm you?
No.
How do you know my name?
I know who you are, Professor, because I made it my business to find out. I also know something else about you. The opera we've been rehearsing was composed by you, wasn't it?
Petrie turns away, cornered by Harry.
Yes, that is true.
You took it to Ambrose Darcy for help in getting it published, didn't you?
Petrie nods sadly.
What happened?
What happened?
In flashback.
I took him all my music.
£50, no more.
But there is 10 years' work there. 10 years of my life, sir. Surely £50 is...
Am I not correct in thinking that you have never had any of your work published, Professor?
Petrie. No, not yet. But
so you are completely unknown?
Of course. But everybody...
There are many unknown composers who'd be only too glad to have their works published without any fee at all. Come, I'm a busy man.
No. No. There is a full symphony here, sir. And two quartets. And a concerto for viola. And an opera, sir. A new opera. Complete.
Darcy stares back at him with stone-cold eyes.
Sorry. I accept.
Come in tomorrow and the papers will be ready to sign.
It is embarrassing for me to have to ask this, but perhaps you could manage...
What?
I owe my landlady quite a sum. A small advance, perhaps.
Tomorrow.
Petrie yanks at his bag in frustration.
Thank you.
As Petrie leaves, Darcy strikes through the composer's name on the manuscript and replaces it with his own. Lord Ambrose Darcy. Some days later, a printing press is hard at work. A young apprentice lifts away a printed piece of paper and places it in a tidy pile by the window. From outside, Petrie looks in and reads in horror as he sees his Symphony No. 1 in A major credited to Darcy. He hurries down the stairs of Pickett's, the jobbing printer, and confronts the master printer with what he believes to be an error. The printer stands firm. Later, Darcy berates a stable hand for the upkeep of his carriage.
Look at it. Look at it, man. Filthy.
Yes, my lord.
You expect me to be seen driving in that?
No, my lord.
Do it again.
Yes, my lord.
Have it ready by this evening.
Yes, my lord.
Petrie arrives.
Lord Ambrose, please excuse this intrusion, but I must see you. They said I should find you here. My music.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow may be too late. They are printing my music with...
I think you mean my music, don't you?
I don't understand.
I bought it from you, remember?
Yes, to publish, yes. But they are printing your name on the cover.
My name on my music. Is that so surprising?
You can't mean it.
If you'll kindly excuse me.
You thief! Scoundrel!
Darcy smacks him over the head with his cane. Darcy trots away with a doll-like young woman at his side. Later that night, Petrie breaks into Pickett's print shop. In a fit of rage, he runs over to the pages of his symphony and begins to tear them up, one by one. He sees an incinerator at the far end of the room and gathers an armful of printed music from various piles. He opens the doors of the blazing incinerator and hurls in the bundles of paper. He runs back for more and again stokes up the fire with another armful of printed pages. He notices the printing press. He rips out each of the printing plates and tries to smash them on the floor.
My music.
When he fails, he starts to look for some liquid corrosives in large demijohn bottles wrapped in basket weave. When he finds a full bottle of acid, he pours it onto the plates that lie on the floor and coughs from the noxious fumes. Suddenly, a burning piece of paper drops out of the open incinerator and sets fire to the print shop. Petrie tries to put the flames out with a sackcloth, but the fire begins to rage. He reaches for a bucket of what he believes to be water and throws it at the flames. A fireball blows back at his face and burns away his skin. Consumed with agony, Petrie makes his way up the burning stairs and out into the street. Petrie goes mad with pain, beating his head with his hands and smacking it against the wall. He runs past an investigating police sergeant and hurries down the deserted dark street towards the nearby river. As the policeman approaches, he throws himself in the river. The current carries him into the outlet and he drifts under the bars, desperately trying to keep his head above water. Unable to swim, his arms thrash about in a futile attempt to stay afloat. Eventually, the flow of water carries him face down into the cavern, where the hunchback awakes from the sleep and rescues him from death. Back in the present, the loyal hunchback by his side.
Who he is, I do not know. And as he cannot speak, I shall never know. Sometimes he is uncontrollable, like a wild animal. But he has saved my life and has looked after me ever since.
And you've lived down here all these years?
And I shall die down here. Look, I'm dying already. But before I go, I implore you, allow me to finish one thing. Let me teach you to use that wonderful voice that God has given you. Then you may never see me again, but you will never forget. Please, give me a little time. A month, 2 weeks, 1 week even. 1 week, and I will work a miracle. She will sing for me, as she has never sung before. And I will hear my work performed.
Petrie goes down on his knees before Harry, who looks across to Christine. she looks at him with compassion. Later, during the opera performance.
As from tonight, there will be a curfew, and every man, woman, and child will be in their house by sunset.
Can I help you, Lord Ambrose?
Get out of my way.
Petrie waits in a dark corner of Latimer's office. Darcy barges in and is shocked to see him in his mask.
What the devil? What is this foolery? Who are you? Answer me, who are you?
Good evening, Lord Ambrose.
Take off that ridiculous mask when you speak to me. Do you hear me? Take it off!
Darcy rips off the mask and flees in horror at what he sees. Meanwhile, in the wings, Christine prepares to go on stage as St. Joan. Harry gives her a good luck kiss, and she enters alone into a stormy scene beside a ruined church. Watches from his haunted box and gestures to his heart as Christine prepares to sing. Later, St. Joan rallies the French troops. Later, St. Joan is marched into a courtroom of arrogant clerics.
At the stake!
I can do no more. You know the consequences. It is the decision of this court to declare you excommunicate and a heretic!
Thank you.
St. Joan lies abandoned on the floor.
No. It's dying in darkest night, in broadest day, I heard your voice in the sunshine, in autumn twilight, in winter snow.
St. Joan walks to her fiery death. The hunchback watches from above in the fly tower.
Hey! What are you doing?
The hunchback makes a run for it, pursued by an angry stagehand. Meanwhile, the curtain descends as Rossi conducts the closing bars of the opera. As Harry, Latham, and the whole audience burst into applause, tears of deep joy well up in Petrie's eye. The crowds roar as Christine takes her curtain call, and the whole auditorium rises to its feet in a standing ovation. As Christine is presented with flowers, the hunchback continues to elude the stagehand. He walks out across a flybar, hanging precariously high above the stage. As Christine receives the full acclaim of the audience, Petrie nods his heartfelt approval from the box. The stagehand spots the hunchback, who tries to escape by jumping onto the rope holding the heavy chandelier. To everyone's horror, directly above Christine's head, the rope begins to break.
Christine!
The hunchback manages to jump clear as the rope frays to a single strand. Petrie throws off his mask, leaps onto the stage, pushes Christine to safety, and is himself crushed to death by the falling chandelier. The curtain falls for the last time as Christine, Harry, and the hunchback are consumed with grief. The end.